the responses that the Rambam gives the Talmidei of Rabbeinu Ephraim. Karshi Rambam of Grikotim Rabbeinu Ephraim v'davar mashinero misof nedarim shiyada isha kiyad bala lachain ein adam nizaka be'erov elam kein yesh la chotzer bosa mavui. We already answered Rabbeinu Ephraim, what he seemingly saw. From the Gemara at the end of Nedarim, this is the Gemara in the Nedarim, Daf Pei Chesam Abeis. Right. I had links for it, but it'll be too much of a pain to go through this process to pull up the link. Everyone should have access to a Gemara. So a Gemara over there talks about that, the sugya over there is Aliba Darav, who paskins like Rav Meir, that Yad Isha Kiyad Bala, a woman's hand is like her husband's hand, and therefore, that being the case, right? So let's say the man wants to make an Eruv. Right? So we know when we make an Eruv, part of it is to be Mizake, right? To make an acquisition on behalf of everyone in some food. Everyone could theoretically come and eat together. That's part of, making the shituf hamavui, making like all the different courtyards into one, is that they'll all come and enjoy a meal together. You have to make it the joint meal of everybody. So a person that wants to now, donate the food for everybody. Right? So he wants to make it, the food become the collective property of everyone that's joining the Eruv. So, but he has to make it theirs. How does he do so? Right? So he says, well, he gives it to his wife. Right? And the wife should pick it up and be zochen it on behalf of all the participants of the Eruv. Right? So the Gemara over there says, according to Rav Meir, right, it ought not to work. He can't give it to his wife to acquire it on behalf of everybody else because her hand is his hand. It's not like he gave it to another party to be zochet it on behalf of everyone else because she's not another party. Her hand is his hand. And the only way it could work, according to Rebbe Meir, right, is if the woman herself, right, has property that also has to be added to the Eruv. She has real estate, right? That also happens to be, that needs to be added to the Eruv. Right? So, since she needs to be zocha in the food for herself, because she's also participating in the Eruv, so, migu de zocha nafsha, she zocha lachrine, right? And since she has to be zocha, she can be zocha for herself, because she's also participating in the Eruv. Because she has her own property that needs to be added to the Eruv. So, Agav herself, she could now be Zocha for others. But if not for that, the Gemara says, he can't give it to his wife to be Zocha for everyone else because she is him. Her hand is his hand. It's only because she has to be Zocha for herself. Because she had her own property that only through that, that since she's Zocha for herself, she could be Zocha for us. But otherwise, it should not work. Because Yad Isha Kiyad Bala, right? And therefore, if she wouldn't have her own property, he would have to give it to some other party, but not his wife, because he's giving it to his wife, he'll give it to himself. All right, so the tshuva has to be slightly amended, right? That Elam Kein Yesh Lo, she has, instead of Lo, she has a Chatzar, Bosa Mavui, right? So now, what the Rambam's writing in shorthand. The Rambam doesn't paskin that way. The Rambam, Perakah of Vilchos Eruvin, paskins that a man can give his wife the food to make the collective meal of all the members of the Eruv, and he doesn't qualify that she needs to also have property that's being added to the Eruv. So the Rambam paskin against that Gemara. So Rabbeinu Ephraim in his own lifetime, right, confronted the Rambam, right, that you're not paskining like this Gemara that says a man can only give it to his wife. if she herself owns property that has to be additative. Otherwise, Yad Isha Kiyad Ba'ala, it's like he's passing it from his right hand to his left hand. Right? And I already explained to Rabbeinu Ephraim, Rambam's now talking about a discussion he already started with Rabbeinu Ephraim in his own lifetime. I already explained to him. Shezeh kula aliba de Rebbe Meir, ha'omer yad isha kiyad ba'ala, that halacha, right, that a woman can't be zocha from her husband, you know, in food for all the members of the Eruv, unless she is also joining the Eruv, but short of that, not. That's only according to Rebbe Meir. It holds yad isha kiyad ba'ala, the hand of a woman is like the hand of her husband, right? And I didn't paskin like Rebbe Meir. I paskin like the Rabbanon. So then Rabbeinu Ephraim then subsequently sent another question to the Rambam, a spin-off of this first question, right? But in the interim, Rabbeinu Ephraim died. Right, so he asked me further amongst these last questions that I'm responding to. Rabbeinu Ephraim asked, Kasha alai bo chiluko shorav. Shomer lo shanu ela masha nosenet ve notenet lepich. Right, like we said, the case of that sugya in the Dorim is really coming off a Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about the following scenario, right? Like time in memoriam, a father-in-law made a neder not to give any hana to his son-in-law. So now the father-in-law wants to give his daughter, right, a gift. Right? He wants to give her money, right, that she should have for spending. And you have a problem. Masha kana isha kana bala. How can you give it to the wife without giving it to the son-in-law, right, who he swore that he's never, he made a neder, he's not going to give him any hana, right? You know, whatever a woman acquires, her husband acquires, right? So, what's he supposed to do, right? So, Rav says, Rav qualifies what the Mishnah says to do, that the Mishnah is Rav Meir, and even though Yad Isha Kiyad Ba'ala, like we just said, right, with all the stringencies that, her hand is his hand, but nonetheless, it's possible, right, if he gave it to his daughter on condition, right, that it's only hers, for what she's going to use, what she's going to consume, what she's going to put in her mouth, right? Those were the words of the Mishnah, and those were the words of Rav, right? That's the Mishnah is even according to Rav Meir, and even according to Rav Meir, that a woman's hand is her husband's hand, still there's a way to give your daughter something, and it won't be considered giving it, right, to the husband, right? And that's if you give it to her solely for the purpose of consumption, putting it in her mouth is the words of the Mishnah. And Rabbeinu Ephraim says, explain to me how it works. If her hand is his hand, how does it work? That just because you gave it to her for consumption purposes, right, it's okay then. Right? It's not called like you gave it to him. Right, so that was Rabbeinu Ephraim's first question from his second battery of questions to the Rambam. Himchik Lomar Zal, right, and then Rabbeinu Ephraim further asked, now, seemingly, our Gemara will, this Gemara Nedarim, talking about this issue, right, of that the central point of the issue is how to circumvent the problem of Yad Isha Kiyad Bala, right, that the hand of a woman is like the hand of her husband. So the Gemara in Kiddushin also addressed this issue, right? The Fisha Rabba Bashem Rav Shesh Omar Akni Le Acher Mana Ba Omar Aminashem Le Rabbach Bo Rishus. So Rabbi Meir Savar that the Rabbi Meir Savar that there's no Eitza. So the mission over there is actually going on slaves, right? Because there's a parallel halacha Yad Evet Kiyad Rabbo, and the Gemara over there itself equates the two, right? That both. The hand of a slave is like the hand of his master, and the hand of the wife is like the hand of the husband. So the Gemara wants to know, how can you give a gift to a woman that won't belong to her husband? And the Gemara is coming off a case, that it's the real sugi over there is talking about a slave. How can you give a slave money, that won't belong to his master, and the slave will then be able to use that money to buy his redemption, to buy his freedom from his master. So the real question was what we just said, right? That the Gemara is talking about, is it possible in any way, right, to give a slave money that won't automatically belong to his master, then the slave could use it to redeem himself from his master. And Rav Meir holds it's impossible, right? You cannot do that. It won't work. And simply the parallel case is, just like you cannot give, right, a slave money on condition that it shouldn't belong to the master, right? So also you can't give a woman something on condition that it shouldn't belong to her husband. And here the Gemara in the Dorm says it is possible, according to Rav Meir, right? Right, and then he had a further question, right, in trying to stand the Gemara. So the second question was, it seemingly contradicts the Gemara and Kiddushin that according to Rav Meir, there is no way forward, right, according to the Rabban there is, but the Rav sets up the Sugya and the Dorim like Rav Meir. And according, so according to Gemara and Kiddushin, there is no way forward, no condition will work, seemingly, right? Right, and the third question, the actual words of the Mishnah, right, going back to the Sugya and the Dorit, was your husband should have no reshus except what you put in your mouth. Right, so this is how Rabbeinu Ephraim read it, and the way he read it, he demanded an explanation. Mazot harishus asher hotio sabal haMishnah min haKlal. Right? What is this rishus? Right? That was removed. That the rishus, the baal, the rishus sabal, the domain of the baal has been removed from everything except what she eats. What rishus has been removed? V'imavur akonsi men of begadim al chesu bedavash mitalotia zulat haachila hatia matalach hazerslav. And his final question was, the second part of this question, because going on the same phrase, right? Your husband has no rishus, the way Rabbeinu Ephraim said, he has no rishus except on what you consume. Let's say she didn't eat it. Let's say it was given to her, right? Like it says, the toch pia, which Rabbeinu Ephraim took literally. It has to go in her mouth. She has to eat it. But she didn't eat it. Right, she took that money and didn't buy food. She took that money and bought clothes, right? Or did anything else that services her, right, other than eating. So does she have to now give the present back to her father because she did not uphold the conditions, right? These were the questions of Rabbeinu Ephraim, of which the second question, right, of how this Gemara will shtim with the Gemara and Kiddushin is actually a question that all the Rishonim grapple with, right? We're going to go with the Derech of the Rambam, and as the Rambam explains these sugyas most masterfully, right, and also explains his own psakim in a manner that all the Nosei Kalim and Rishonim were speculating why the Rambam said what he said, and they were unaware. I have not yet seen in any of the Rishonim that they were aware of this tshuva. This tshuva is Kamin Chaimer. Right, when Rambam explained himself on this sugya and how to reconcile the two sugyas, and also the far-reaching ramifications that if you look in the Nosei Kalim by all the relevant Rambams that tie into this tshuva, you will see that they did not have this tshuva in front of them, and they were speculating. Some, like the Ran, got very, very close, but not exactly. So now we begin the tshuva. Now tshuva, d'u. He's talking to the Talmid, so that's why it's plural. He's talking to the Talmid of Rabbeinu Ephraim, because Rabbeinu Ephraim was already nifter by the time these tshuvas were sent out. Shema shegaram zal lahakshov b'chol masha nitkasha lo ad shelo iskima etzol zot ha'alacha shebesof nidorim in ha'alacha shebetchila kiddushin v'nishavu b'em kos v'ekos asher amar. You know what, the source of his problem that caused him to see a stira, right, a contradiction between the sugya at the end of Nidorim, right, which, as we said, that sugya is how if a father-in-law was Madir, his son-in-law, how can he give a gift to his daughter and not, and will be considered only hers, and he's not going to be over on his netter, right? Seeing that, and, you know, in contradiction to the sugya of Kiddushin that also talks about this sugya of Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabbi and Yad Isha Ki Yad Baala. So of course, you know, the source of his confusion. That he understood, right, that what the giver was doing, right, you know, like in this case, the father giving to daughter, that with his tanai, with his conditions that he's laying down, what he's, as it were, magically doing is making it that the husband doesn't own it except regarding what goes down her throat. Right? As if that's what the giver has the power to do, the power to obstruct the legal rights of the husband and, as it were, mitigate his rights and to contract them, that his rights only apply to what she consumes, right? That's what Rabbeinu Ephraim thought. Umachar shesavar zal shekach hakavon, and since Rabbeinu Ephraim of blessed memory thought that that is what's going on, right? That the giver, as if, has the right to contract, meaning be mitzamsem, right? Right, mitigate. Right, the rights of the husband in what his wife acquires. So he had all these questions. That was the root of his confusion, says the Rambam. And you know, so he, you know, is it possible to contract a husband's rights in what his wife acquires? If that's the case, then we have a contradiction with that Gemara and Kiddushin that says it's impossible. You cannot contract. You cannot mitigate. I mean contract, I mean you cannot be mitzamtim. You cannot in any way mitigate a husband's rights, right, in what his wife acquires, right? And also it gave him the gender of the confusion as far as the Pashup Shot, what type of, if he could mitigate his rights, what is the nature of the rights that remain seemingly regarding, you know, what she actually ate. Vein adavar kach, right? But this is not the case, right? Bilvar lachem zoysa halacha shepzom gam b'tzias kiddushin. Right, so Rambam says, you know, I'm going to learn the Gemara with you from being in such a beautiful tshuva. The Rambam's going to go through both Gemaras step by step. Just teach them the Gemara and how he understood it, how he read it. So I'm going to teach you this halachah. So the Gam Tzchias Kiddushin, right? This Gemara in the Dorim Daf Peches, and that Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Chav Gimel. I'm going to go through both Gemaras, show you how to read them, and you'll see that there's no contradiction. If you carefully contemplate everything I'm going to show you, letter by letter, and then you'll compare it to what were Rabbeinu Ephraim's questions and confusions. Yisparu lachem asfekas kulam, after I present you the Gemaras, the way I understand them, the way I read them, Rabbeinu Ephraim's sfekas will, you know, dissipate. Nusacha Mishnah. So the Rambam starting, Mamashel, quoting the Mishnah in Nidorin. All right. So a father-in-law, you know, made a neder, not that his son-in-law should get no pleasure from him, but he wants to give his daughter money. Omer la, he tells her, we just switched pages. We just moved pages. I just shared the next link. All right. So a father who wants to give his daughter money, his eitza, says the Mishnah, is I'm giving to you as a gift, but as long as your husband has no rishus over them, no power over them. Ela mashat notenet l'toch pich, other than what you put in your mouth. Right? That's the Mishnah. So look what the Rambam gives a lesson from beginning to end. Voracious masheroi lavino. So the first thing that I want to make you understand is the case. Sheruvain says, Shenesra Anas Chami Rav Ruvain, that he now was prohibited of getting any type of pleasure from his father-in-law. In Motzi Yaakov Abito Eishes Ruvain Umachilum Abishas. Now, if Yaakov will want to spend money on his daughter, who is the wife of Ruvain, and give her food, and give her clothes, like take her off shopping for a day, take her on a date for a town, and Ruvain Bazaver, you should know that itself is not a problem. Ruvain, who's not supposed to be getting any type of pleasure from Yaakov, his father-in-law, is not in any, that's no transgression on Ruvain's part if Yaakov took his daughter out for a day on a shopping spree. Right? Umama Mishnu, it's a beforesh of Mishnah earlier. Hamudar hanah mechavero, a person has made a neder not to give any hanah to a friend. Shokel a shiklo, bizonis ishtov es banav, vapishchayim is all same. So like I say, I'm not going to give any hanah to Ruvain. Right? I could feed Ruvain's wife. Right? And even though Ruvain is saving money by my doing that, because if I wouldn't support his wife, he would have to. That's still not called to give anah to Ruvain. Right? Just because I pay up Ruvain's debts, since I'm not giving anything to Ruvain directly, that's okay. Right? So also in our case, right, the problem is not how to give any type of pleasure to his daughter, because that's mutter as per this Mishnah that we just quoted. Right? That if I swore not to give anah to someone else, I could support his wife, and that's not a problem. So therefore, the topic of our Mishnah is not how can the father give his daughter pleasure, because that's not prohibited. Right, because it's as long as he's not giving anything directly to his son-in-law. So that's not the question. Ela kavana rak ech yiten Yaakov lebito eishes Ruvain mos lios be'elotzom b'talter kfi shetirtza. The problem over here is purely he wants to give her money. He doesn't want to give her food, give her clothing, take her shopping. He wants to give her assets. He wants to make her rich. Give her spending money. That she should have her own money to spend. You get it? He's giving her money, right? He's not feeding her. He's giving her money, right? Because he gives her the money with an absolute gift with no strings attached. Whatever she acquires, her husband acquires. Because now she's getting a gift. She's getting assets, whatever she acquires, right, belongs to her husband. That's the problem. He's giving her money. And so therefore, her getting richer is her husband getting richer, right? Because, whatever a woman acquires, her husband acquires. So that's the problem over here. Vim nasna v'yoymar. So let's say he gives it to her on condition, right, that your husband has nothing to do with the money, right? He has no control over the money that I'm giving you. That doesn't help, not according to anybody, not according to Reb Meir, not according to the Rabbanan, whose opinions the Rambam's going to explain to us the way he understands the Rabbanan, right? Saying, giving it to a woman, money, almanas, that your husband has no control over that money, does not help according to any shitas tanoim. Lo divrei Reb Meir, v'lo l'rabban, not turn Reb Meir, that holds yad isha kiyad ba'ala, but even according to the Rabbanan, that have more liberal ideas about this, which we're going to learn about. The Rabbam has a very interesting take on that. But the to what extent the Rabbanon have a more, you know, liberal view of that. Right? But to give a woman money on condition that her husband has nothing to do with it is like saying, you are not a married woman. It's because the fact that they're married makes it as such, right? That her hand is his hand. Her domain is his domain. To say on condition that your husband should have no connection, no rights to this acquisition that you're making right now, to this gift that you're getting, says the Rambam, is equally absurd as saying it's on condition that you're not a married woman. Because that's what marriage is, right? Once they are married, Masha kana isha kana bala, yad isha ki yad bala, right? And that's according to everyone, even according to the Rabbana. So to say on condition that your husband should have nothing to do with it is like saying on condition that you're not a married woman. And just like you can't undo the fact that she's a married woman, you can't undo the husband's rights to whatever she acquires. Once she acquires the gift, the husband acquires it also, and it is not within the giver's power in any way to mitigate, right, or to negate, right, the domain that the husband has over his wife. So now we're going to flip to the Gemara in Kiddushin. And the Rambam's over here speaking in a very short form because he assumes that the Talmidei Rabbeinu Ephraim, right, knew the words of the Gemara in Kiddushin if they didn't have the explanation. So let me just speak out that there was a machlokes over there, right? It became a machlokes Rav Sheshes and Rabbi Elezer. Rav Sheshes is mentioned first. Rav Elezer is the second opinion of the Gemara. Rav Sheshes says that you're right. According to Rav Meir, there's nothing to do. If a man gives a woman money, al minas that ain lebalach reshuspo, on condition that your husband has nothing to do with it, his tanai is nothing. That condition is nothing, and the husband acquires it, and that condition is nothing. But according to Rav Sheshes, the Rabbanon do disagree, and as if the giver has the power to control that only the woman should acquire it and not the husband. But not according to Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, there's no way to control it. Whatever a woman acquires, her husband acquires, so his condition that on condition your husband doesn't have a chelik is nothing. That's Rabbi Meir, right? According to Rav Sheshes. But Rav Sheshes says, according to Rabbanan, the giver does have this power to make it that I'm only want the woman to acquire and not the man. That's the Rabbanan according to Rav Sheshes, but according to Rav Meir, there's no way out. But then the Gemara comes on and springs Rabbi Elezer, and Rabbi Elezer says, that's not true, right? Even according to the Rabbanan, if a man says to a woman, here is a gift on condition that your husband has nothing to do with it, even according to the Rabbanan, his condition is nothing, And the husband acquires it just like she acquired it, right? So that was the machlokas, that even according to the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Lezer, saying on condition your husband has nothing to do with it won't help. So we're going to let the Rambam talk now, that our Gemara in the Nedarim is perfectly consistent with Rabbi Lezer. So now he just recaps the Gemara over there in Kiddushin, starting with Rav Sheshes, even though his goal is to get to Rabbi Lezer. Vu Amra. Right? And this is what the Gemara said in Kiddushin Daf Chav Gimel. Amar Rava. Amar Rav Sheshes. Rava sent in Rav Sheshes. The Kuli Amar and Kinyin Le'eved B'li Rabbi. Right? Everyone agrees that there is no Kinyin for an Eved, you know, without his master. Whatever an Eved acquires, right, his master acquires. Van Kinyan Leisha Bali Bala. Right? Right, and then also there's no way for a woman to acquire something without her husband acquiring. Bacha B'mayaskinan, but here, what is the case? over here that there is a way to give something, right, to a Eved, right, without the master acquiring it. There's trying to give something. There's a way to give something to a woman without the husband acquiring it. So what are we talking about? Someone gave the Eved or the woman respectively, right, money on condition that the master or the husband respectively have no control over the money. So Rameir Savar, right, so he's speaking shorthand over here, Rameir holds, it doesn't work. That condition is nothing, right? But the Rabban holds that that condition does work. But that's Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes holds that according to the Rabbanan, that condition can work. Revez Omer Kol Kiai Gavda the Koy Amalo Pligi the Kani Eve the Kani Rabbe. Right, everyone. Reb Lezer says everyone agrees. Right, that even if you say Almenas that your husband has nothing to do with it, or Almenas that the master has nothing to do with it, that in both cases, even Rabbanan agreed the condition is nothing. And the master acquires what the Eved acquires, and the husband acquires what the woman acquires. The Tanai to stop the husband's rights doesn't work. Right? V'chabu ma'askinan, here is the case. K'gon d'akta amanat sh'teitze bo l'cherus. Right? Regarding the case of the slave, someone gave the slave money, said, this is on condition that you use the money only and only for the purpose of buying your freedom. Meaning, I'm not giving you money to spend. I'm giving you money for the specific purpose of acquiring your freedom, right? That he's not really giving the slave a full gift, right? He's only giving him the rights to use it for a specific purpose. But for any other purpose, he's not giving it to him for it. So it's not a real gift, right? It's only the right to use it for a specific purpose of buying his freedom, right? And Rav Meir Savar Ki Amar Lei Almenas V'lo Klum. Right, so Rav Meir says even regarding that case that he didn't get a full gift, he just got money to use specifically for the purpose of buying his freedom. Rav Meir holds even that doesn't work, right? Rabbanan Sabi, they nami halo akni el amanas sheitzei bo l'cherus. But the Rabbanan hold that it does work, right? Because for the reason that we said, it's not a full gift, right? He didn't even give it to the Eved, for the Eved to have it as his personal assets. He gave it to him for a very specific purpose of buying his freedom. So that's what Rebbe Lezer says, right? Rebbe Lezer, right? Right, Reb Lezer says that the Rabbanan will allow, right, will allow a circumstance that an Eved, right, could own something, right, and his master won't own it. That's not really called ownership in the first place because it's not a real gift. It's just being given to him for a specific purpose, but it's not a full gift. It's not his to do whatever he wants with it. The Kvarn is Bar Medivre Lezer Vehem Emes. So now it's become clear from the words of Reb Lezer, Behem Emes, and the words of Reb Lezer are Emes, meaning the Rambam says, I paskin Reb Lezer, right, which is contra to the Tosfos and the Ravid. If we have time, we'll speak out what other Rishonim say. The Rambam says, I view Reb Lezer, who's the final word in the Sugya, as the final halacha, Shadivri Akol, that according to both Reb Meir and the Rambam, Im nasa li shol eved, v'om ha'amanat she'en lach ba'al v'en rishus, she'en l'rach ba'en rishus, kana rab v'kana ba'al. To give it, even according to the Rabban, to give a woman something on condition that her husband should have nothing to do with it. Or to give a slave something on condition that his master should have nothing to do with it. Even according to the Rabban, the condition is nothing, and the husband and the master respectively acquire what the slave and woman, the gift that the slave and the woman respectively got. Achen yetne beguf hadara nitan lo ala adam shen nosin lo. So, but what is the difference? What was Rabbi Lezer machadesh? And this is an unbelievable, this is where the Rambam gets into his lumdus, right? That Rabbi Lezer says, of course, you have no right to mitigate the rights of a husband or the rights of a master over a slave. But that's not what you're trying to do in the scenario that he set up, that he says could work. According to the Rabbanan, and the Rambam is going to be Mechadosh, it could even work in a certain way, it's according to Rabbi Meir. Right? It is like something which none of the other Rishonim thought about. That Rabbi Lezer is Yesod, that he said in the Rabbanan, could apply to Rabbi Meir also, as we're about to explain. Says, you're not trying to control the rights of the recipient. Right? You cannot, you know, the recipient is his own person. You can't control the rights of the recipient. Right? You are controlling the nature of the gift. Right? The nature of the transaction, not the rights of the recipient. You have no right to mitigate the rights of the recipient. Right? So let's read the Rambam again inside. Right? Right. I'm going to start again for a couple lines earlier. He has to make a tonight regarding the actual body of what's given, meaning he has to put a condition in the gift itself. He can't dump conditions on the person, you know, on the rights of the recipient that he has no right to do. He has to, you know, put his conditions on the object given, not on the rights of the recipient. He can't control the rights of the recipient. Right? Ratzaloma, Ala Isha Bevet, right? He cannot control, right, the nature of you know, how the Isha and Evet are Kone. Right, they're wired up to be koneh for their husband and master, respectively. He has no control there. He has no control over the recipient and how the recipient is wired up, that whatever he acquires automatically goes to another party. Right, the giver has no right to control the nature of the recipient. He has the right to control the nature of the gift itself, but not the rights of the recipient or how the recipient is wired up. So the way that the condition does work, he dumps a condition, right, on the body of the gift that he gave, not on the recipient. And he says as follows, this object was not given. Right, so going on the case of Rabbi Lezer in the Rabbana, right, that the Rabbanan say, as opposed to Rabbi Meir, there is a way to give money to a slave that will not automatically be acquired by the master, and the slave can then use that money to buy his freedom from the master, because he's putting a condition on the money itself and saying, this money is designated, right, to be used to buy your freedom. So the condition is in the money. The condition is in the nature of the gift, not in the recipient, right? He's inserting the condition on the money and saying this money is earmarked to be used for one purpose and one purpose alone, to buy your freedom. But he's putting the condition in the money, in the way the money is to be used. He's not trying to lay down conditions on the recipient. Was tiskaya matana in your turn only called, then gift will go through if the master is willing to receive the money as, you know, to buy, right, the slave's freedom. So then the gift goes through, right? But the gift will only go through if the master accepts the money, you know, as what it takes to buy the freedom of the slave. If the master doesn't want to take the money that way, so it comes out that the gift was never given in the first place. Right? The gift is null and void because it was only given on condition that the money be used in such and such a way. So if the master accepts the money from the slave as the purchase of the slave's freedom, with this the slave has purchased freedom, so then the gift goes through, right? Because the money was, you know, given for that purpose. And if the master says no deal, right? So the money doesn't belong to the slave. The money goes back to the giver. Right? So it's not a gift to the slave. The money is being, the gift is a gift to the slave, but only on condition that the money fulfills its purpose. So there's a condition in the money of how it's to be used. Right? And that type of condition the giver could do. He could make a condition on the money of how the money's supposed to use and say the gift only goes through if it's used this way. And if it's not used this way, there's no gift in the first place. So, but according to Rabbi Meir, even that is impossible. Right? So Rambam doesn't explain yet why. Right? And we're going to assume Rambam's going to say something that's going to need a tremendous amount of explanation. Right? So now also regarding the woman, right, we could extrapolate. So even though the din of Rabbi Lezer was said regarding a slave, right, getting money that should, you know, be his to use to get his freedom, right? And that was the case that was discussed in Kiddushin. But since, you know, the two halachas are congruent, are parallel, I should say. The two halachas are parallel. The halacha of Yad Isha, Kiyad Bala, and Yad Evet, Kiyad Rabo. So therefore we can extrapolate as follows, says the Rambam. If a father would give his daughter money and say, I'm giving you this money on condition that your husband has nothing to do with them, of course the husband acquires it. He, like we said, he has no right to mitigate the rights of the recipient. He can't control the nature of the recipient. That's not within his rights. You can't make a tanai that you acquire but not your husband, because it's a fact, you know, the woman is wired up in a way that whatever she acquires, her husband acquires, and it's not within the giver's rights to control, you know, how the recipient, how the recipient works. So, her husband will acquire that money until he makes a condition not on the recipient, but he makes a condition on the money. He makes the money conditional. Strings attached to the money. Right? V'chein amra Mishnah. So now going back to the Mishnah in Nedarim. Ubuvach loya balach reshus b'hem elamashar alteret lepich. Your husband should have no control over the money except what you put in your mouth. Shira dron kach. This is the way to understand the Mishnah. Right, your husband will not have any control of them. But what does that mean? That the money is earmarked, right? The money is earmarked, is designated for your consumption. And we're switching pages again. We just flip the page. Kilu Omar, it's as if he said, Hare Amoso Nesurim Lach B'matana Amanat Shetokli Ban V'tishti. Right? The money is earmarked, that the money is designated. So the money is given on condition that they be used for you to eat and drink. L'chein lo kana ba'al l'divrei akol. Right? So that's why, according to this is an amazing thing that the Rambam has yet to explain, that when you do this, right, you designate the money for consumption. And he's going to say consumption is just an example. Once the money is designated for a purpose, right, so then it does go through, right, because, you know, you're not really giving it to the woman to be her asset. Because if you give it to her to be her asset, so of course her assets are his assets. You know, but you're not giving it to her to be her money. You're giving it to her to be used in a specific way, right? And he says, since you put a tanai on the money is designated for such and such a purpose, and only for such a purpose, right? So that goes through, right? Because I'm designating the money for a particular use. I'm not making the money her assets. It will be her assets, will be his assets, but I'm not making it hers. I'm designating the money to be used by her for a specific purpose. And says the Rambam, it even works according to Rabbi Meir. And that's amazing. because seemingly it contradicts what we just learned. It only works according to the Rabbana. Right? But Ram says, trust me, the Mishnah Nedarim is even according to Rabbi Meir. He designates the money to be used for consumption. Even Rabbi Meir holds that'll work, right? That it's hers and not his, because it's not really hers either. She's just the authorized consumer. It's not her asset, right? But even according, works according to Rabbi Meir, even though the case in Kiddushin, Rabbi Meir did not allow giving a Eved money to be used for his liberation. We have to understand what the difference is. The Rambam's only going to get to that at the end of the Tshuva. Umama Gemara is also Mishnah. So now going through the Gemara on this Mishnah. Amar Rav lo shonu el damar la marchak no senet ve noten lepich. Ava amar marsha tirtzi ta'asi kona yoson ba'al. So Rav said on the Gemara, right, in the Gemara, that the Mishnah is to be taken literally, right? That, you know, only for consumption. But if the, let's say the father says to his daughter, here's money that I don't want my son-in-law, you know, your husband, have anything to do with, spend it the way you want. So he doesn't designate a purpose. He says, spend it the way you want. So Rav says, if he said that, it doesn't work. Kana yason ba'al, the husband will also acquire that asset. When he gave it to her, you know, wide open, with not in any way focusing what it's supposed to be used for, giving it to her, use it how you want. That type of openness is like acquisition, and the husband is kind of, right? And the Rambam further explains Rav, right? What's a lomer? Shim pirish shenasan elamos or mashenasan lo almenas shetochol mihem o tishde. The kamol kenim pirish shenasan elamos arash shetul abashpeh. Otim bem chotzer, otikru bem shifcha. Ubechlau shet hitna beguf amos shula davar ploni shas lo kana bal. So the Rambam says an amazing chiddush that is not pashut to some rishonim. Some rishonim understood Rav that it's only for food, because by the time the gift goes through, it's nothing that's worth anything to him. Because the gift goes through when she's eating it, right? So it gives so once it's chewed, he doesn't want it. You know, so when it goes through, there's nothing for him to be zocha in. But the Rambam doesn't learn that way in Rav. The Rambam says, you know what Rav meant? You know, he said when he says to take the Mishnah literally, he means take the Mishnah literally. There has to be a distinct designated purpose. Right, so food was an example, but any distinct designated purpose, like buy clothes, buy a house, renovate your house, buy a maid, right? So all those things also, any designated purpose that's a specific designated purpose is good enough. It's good enough, and it's called that, you know, she can have that money and use it in the designated way, and it's not called that he gave money to his son-in-law. So the Rambam is mechadesh, you know, something which is not pashut to a lot of Rishonim, right, that when Rav says take the Mishnah literally, it means take the Mishnah literally, i.e. designated purpose. But any designated purpose will be good. Right, because shidna b'kuf amos shula davar ploni, because going with the principle that we learned from the Gemara in Kiddushin, that you could put conditions on the body of the money. You can't put conditions on the recipient, right, and the legal nature of the recipient, but you could put conditions on the money. Right, shila davar ploni, that the money is designated for such and such a thing, shas lo karama, then the husband doesn't acquire it. The fi shalom asa elamas el davar miyucha, because he didn't really give her the money to be hers, he only gave it to her for a particular authorized use. And if she does that distinct, you know, purpose that it was designated for, so the gift goes through. But if not, but it's not hers to be her asset. It's hers to use, but not hers to own. Right? So therefore, it's called that it's hers but not his, but it's hers in the sense that she's just an authorized user. Right? And of course, since it's called a gift, because after she uses it, there's not going to be anything left, but it's not a full gift, and it's called her asset. But, says Rav, the way the Rambam learns Rav, says Rav, if he did not designate, but he says, I don't want yours, but I have anything to do with it, spend it how you want. Spend it the way you want. Right? So Rav says, give me your such wide, sweeping authorization, that's like giving her a gift. And if you gave her a gift, you gave him a gift. Right? Because Masha Kana Isha Kana Bala. So in that case, sweeping authorization to use as you please, that's like giving a full gift. Right? So therefore, the husband does acquire it. Is that Bunny Al Das from Meir? And that's what the Gemara says. Rav is like Rav Meir. Asher Amar B'Kiddushin Kama Shebi'arnu. That he said in Kiddushin, like we explained, Shem Hiknem Mon Alevet Al Menash Yetzibol Cheres Kanadon. Rav Meir said, if you give a slave money earmarked for the purpose of using it to buy his freedom, so that condition is nothing, and the master acquired that money through the slave acquiring it. That condition is nothing. Right? So also here, this is equivalent. Our case, you know, the case of giving sweeping authorization to use it as you see fit is parallel to that case in Kiddushin, according to Rav Meir, right? That you'll give it, you know, to the Eved to buy his liberation. That's called to give a gift, right? So also over here, giving her carte blanche, she can use it how she wants. That's also called giving a gift. Right? So in the words of the Rambam, right, he gives it to the woman, you know, this 100, you know, zuz, on condition she should do anything she wants. So now the husband does acquire it. Change page. All right. The husband acquires it. V'totero Masha Tirtza. And the Rambam says a very interesting point over here that was not some achronim, you know, David Yosef had a hard problem. You know, he was not comfortable with this line in his edition of the Chuvas Rambam. But I think what the Rambam is saying is poshut, even though it's a little bit hard to swallow. You know, you understand that according to Rabbi Meir, right, you give a woman money, you know, on condition that her husband, you know, has nothing to do with it, and she could spend it however she wants, right? The condition is nothing, right? And the husband is legal owner, right? What happens to the money? What happens to the money? The Rambam says, right? Of course, the husband's called, as it were, on the books, if there are any accountants in the crowd, on the books. The husband is the owner of this asset, right? Because it's giving carte blanche. You can use it in any way you want. That's the equivalent of giving a whole gift, according to Rav, according to Rabbi Meir, right? But what's the halacha? He said he wants it used that way, any way you want. So the husband acquires it, but the condition remains intact. She can use it any way she wants, right? Which means even though the husband owns it, he'll never enjoy it. That's the interesting irony over here. Like I said, some achronim found this incredulous. If the husband acquires it, how could she spend what's not hers? But no, the two don't contradict. All right. Like I said, Rav David Yosef found this a little bit problematic. I don't know if that's his final ruling, but I think the Rambam is very clear. I think the Rambam makes perfect sense, even though it's a bit ironic. Right? So he says, you know, it's yours to use in any way you want. Okay, so kana ba. But it was given on that condition, right? If she doesn't use it any way she wants, then the matana's bottle, right? Because the condition wasn't upheld. So even though kana bow, but the condition has to be upheld also. So you have an interesting irony over here that, you know, an accountant will say that the husband is richer, right? That he has, you know, these assets now to put on his balance sheet, because Masha Kohen, because in this given under these conditions, it's called like a real gift. So whatever she acquires, he acquires. But the condition still has to be upheld. The Rambam says, so as much as even though the Baal owns it, but the condition that she could spend it as she sees fit still has to be upheld. So he owns it, she spends it, right? None of this that it's going to have to be sold like all other, you know, when a woman earns money, right? Or stuff that a woman brings into a marriage, right? That the halacha is, you know, the body of it belongs to her, but the Baal eats the payrus, the husband gets the revenues, right? Gets the rents or the fruits, you know, and but the woman owns the body of it. Over here, that's not going to be the case, right? The husband owns it, right? But she could wear it into the ground, right? She could wear it into the ground because the condition that she could use it as she sees fit has to be upheld, right? So it's just an interesting irony, you know, but I don't think there's any real problem in Svara to hear this, right? It's, it belongs to him, but the Tanai that she has to spend it as she sees fit has also has to be upheld, so she will Totiano Masha Tirza. So now, over here, everyone had a problem how to read the continuation of the tshuva, but it, to me, it's clear that the Rambam is just going on the next line in Gemara, right, which is already getting into the opinion of Shmuel, right? So I my understanding, and this is muchrach, this is most definitely muchrach, right? All the other terutzim that were said, you'll look in the footnotes here on footnote 8, right, that's on the screen. We don't have to come on to any of these dechikas, right? It's very simple that the Ram over here is now going on the next line in Gemara, which is not Rav anymore. We're going in the opinion of Shmuel, which is the way the Rambam's going to paskin la halacha. Right? V'lo kara baal kadei shiyimo baneder. Right? So now we say that the husband does not acquire, meaning the other opinion in the Gemara, right? That the husband does not acquire it so as that the husband should be in violation of the neder. Gemara, this is what the Gemara says. Shmuel Amar Filu Masha Tirtzi Asi Kanabal. Right? Shmuel says, all right, Shmuel disagrees with Rav and says, no, if a person gives a woman money on condition that her husband should have nothing to do with it, and she should spend it, use it as she sees fit, that's also good. That's also good, right? So Shmuel argues on Rav and says, even just saying it's for her use, even if you didn't designate a usage, that's good enough. You don't have to designate a usage. Even sweeping authorization to use as she sees fit is still called to give it for use as opposed to give it as an asset, right? And therefore, it's perfectly okay, right? As, right? So Maskif La Rabzera Kaman also Ashmites the Rav Krabmeya Damar Yada Isha Kia Baula Urmini. So now Rabzera continued and said, who does this this sugya, right? The din, I say, the din of Rav. It goes like Rabbi Meir, right? That says Yada Isha Kia Baula in a very extreme way. And then the Gemara asked the Stira, you know, from Eruvin, right? Eruvin, how can, if Yadi Shekiyad Rabba, Yadi Shekiyad Bala, how can he give her food to acquire on behalf of all the participants of the Eruv? And then so the Gemara had to answer according to reconcile that, you know, with Rav Meir and with Rab, you know, it was to say that it's only talking in a case where she herself is a participant in the Eruv also. She also has a field that belongs to her that needs to be included in the Eruv. So since she has to acquire the food for herself, so agav that she could acquire for everyone else. But that was said strictly according to Rav, you know, to explain how Rav and Rav Meir, how they live with that Mishnah in Eruvin, right? That they had to set it up that it's limited to a case where she herself has a field, right, that needs to be included in the Eruv. right? So the right. So the rest of the halacha is very clear, as we have already explained it. Right. The meaning the Rambam says from this point onwards, it's self-explanatory. He's just referring back to what he wrote at the beginning of the tshuva, that question from Erev was only asking according to Rav. But I, who paskin like Shmuel, as the Rambam's about to say, I could take that Mishnah literally, that even if she doesn't have a field, you know, she doesn't have a field that's being included in the Erev. She doesn't have a house that's being included in the Erev, I meant to say. Right? Still, she could acquire, right, on behalf of all the other participants of the Erev, even though she doesn't have real estate that's being added to the Erev. Now, the Rambam didn't explain yet why. He's going to get back to this, but only partially. We're going to have to pull some pieces together. Right. The quote of this Baruch HaMsidor Maharon Kulam Shedivrei Rav V'Shmuel B'Nedorim Maskimim Divrei Reb Elezer B'Kiddushin V'Sherav K'Rabbi Meir Shmuel K'Rabbonim Lachain Halacha K'Shmuel Ba'amro Masha Tirtzi Asi Lo Kana Ba'al V'Chein HaNosev Amnash Yitzibol Acheros Lo Kana Adam L'Fi Sh'Atzmai Chal Be'etzem Adavar HaNitan. So Rambam says L'Maskona Mamish K'Neged Taismas Keneged Taisvus and Kiddusha, right? I'm telling you that Rav and Shmuel in that sugya and Nedarim, shtim, they fit perfectly with Rabbi Eliezer, right? Right? They shtim perfectly with Rabbi Eliezer because Rabbi Eliezer's din was, in essence, that if you put a condition on the money itself and you don't try in any way to control the recipient, or the rights of the recipient, or how the recipient is wired up. You're just putting conditions on the money, right? So that could work. And there's a way that it can even work according to Rabbi Meir. So I hold that the sugya in the Darim stands with Rabbi Eliezer and Kiddushin. Mamish against Taisvis and against the Ravid, right? That held that the only way to reconcile, right, the sugya in the Darim with the sugya in Kiddushin was to go like Rav Sheshes. Because they understood that Rabbi Eliezer says there's nothing to do according to Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Eliezer, there's nothing to do according to Rabbi Meir. Rav is Rabbi Meir. So there must be, it can only work out like Rav Sheshes. Right? I entice us in Kiddushin Daf Chof Gimel. Right? But Rambam says, I'm telling you that Rav and Shmuel are going like Rabbi Eliezer because the case of Rav and Shmuel here in Nedarim is not to put a condition on the recipient, you know, or try to control the legal nature of the recipient, the conditions are being put on the money, right? Strings attached to the money, not in any way trying to control the recipient, right? Right, so Rav and Shmuel are consistent with Rabbi Eliezer, right? V'sharav k'Rabbi Meir u'Shmuel k'Rabbonan l'chein halacha k'Shmuel. And but what? Rav is like Rabbi Meir, right? That is more mitigating of what type of conditions can be put on the money. That has to be very specific. And the Rambam didn't explain yet why. Seemingly from Rav Meir and Kiddushin, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you know, even a specific condition, use it only to buy your freedom, doesn't work. Right? So we haven't explained that yet. Right? But the Rambam's saying, you know, at this point we'll take it on faith until we get to how the Rambam's going to explain this. Right? By saying, trust me, right, that according to Rav Meir also, a very specific condition on the money works, specific conditions. And according to the Rabbanan, who Shmuel Paskin's like, even sweeping authorization, sweeping rights to use freely is also called a condition on the money. Right? That's what the Rabbanan hold. So Rav is like Rabbi Meir, and Shmuel is like the Rabbanan. And therefore, halacha k'Shmuel. So this is an amazing thing. With this, the Rambam is also going against the Taisvus and the Ravid that we mentioned, right? Because they say, you know, hilchos karav b'isurei, right? The machlokas Rav and Shmuel was said in the context of Nedarim. Nedarim is isurim. And the cloud that we have in Klalei Psak, right, is that hilchos karav b'isurei v'k'Shmuel b'dinei. And therefore, they paskin like Rav, you know, according to their understandings of Rav. Right, they have a difference with the Rambam also in their understandings of Rav, but they say Halacha should be like Rav. The Rambam over here is revealing to us an amazing thing, that which we say, Hilchos HaKarav B'Yisurei U'Kashmul B'Dinei, if they were the origin of that machlokas, right? But now, since we trace the machlokas back to an earlier machlokas of Rav Meir and Chachamim, right? So we go back, you know, with the halacha that yachid v'rabim halacha k'rabim, right? And therefore the halacha will be like Shmuel because he's like the Chachamim, and halacha won't be like Rav because he's like Rav Meir. But you should know, Rabbi Isai, that this is in violation, or in, I don't know if that's the right word, this goes contradictory to the Ram, to the Taisvis and the Ravid that say, no, you know, Ilchsakarab Bisure, and we don't care, right, if it's rooted in an earlier Machlekes, right? By the way, there's another thing that the Rambam doesn't openly negate, right? We have to reserve judgment on what the Rambam holds, you know, that something that the Ran points out in the name of Shmuel HaNagid, right, that he says another reason why the halacha could be like Shmuel in this case, you know, for a whole different reason. Because what's at the root of the machlokas? Even though the shaila was raised in a context of Hilchos Nedorim, but the guts of the question, right, is really totally in Mominus. It's really totally in Hilchos Kinyonin. It's totally in what type of conditions the giver could put on a gift, right? So it means that in the root of the Shiloh, it's Dine Mominus. So Rav Shmuel HaNagid said, right, I am the Ran in the Dharm, I do believe it's the name of Rav Shmuel HaNagid, if I remember, or maybe it's the Rif, right? Say a different Svora, that the Halacha could be like Shmuel for a whole different reason that the Rambam says over here, right? That because you have to look at the guts of the question. Yeah, it was asked in the context of Hilchos Nedarim, but in the guts of it, it's Hilchos Mominus, it's Dine Mominus, and it's Kishmuel B'dine. The Rambam did not say that reason. The reason that he says earlier what Halacha is like Shmuel is because it's linked to an earlier machlokas. So we go by the original machlokas, and over there we'll apply the din of, you know, the klal of Yochid Rabim Halacha Karabim. We have to reserve judgment on what the Rambam would hold of the svara that the Ram brought down from other Rishonim, that since the lumdus is in Hilchos Mominus, so that's why we'd apply the principle of Shmuel Bedine. Do we look at the context of the Shaila, or do we look at the inner mechanics? Right, so that was Machlokas Tosis versus the Rif and Rav Shmuel HaNagid, I do believe, Ayin Naran, right? But the Rambam Bechlal said another point over here that what we say, Hilchsa Karab Bisuri Kishmuel Bedine, is if they're the original Bari Plukta. But if this whole Machlokas is rooted in earlier Machlokas, we'll go back to the source and apply the Klali Apsak of Yachid Varabi Malacha Karabi. Okay? But we resume with the Rambam, right? Because the most complicated parts are yet to come, right? And also, since we're paskening like the Rabbana, as opposed to Rabbi Meir. So in the textbook example over there, you know, that the Rabbana said, if you give the Rabbana as opposed to Rabbi Meir, you give an Eved money, right? Almanas, right? That he should use it solely to buy his freedom. It goes through. It's not, it doesn't become the Eved's to become the master's, and then he can't use the money to buy his freedom. Because it belongs to the master, it works. It works. Excuse me. Right. It works, and then the money will not become acquired by the master, and the Eved will be able to use the money to buy his freedom. Right. The fishatay chal betzim adavar nita. Right. Because again, the condition was inserted in the money, right, in the object that was given. But if he says, on condition that your master has no control over it, he has no rights to it, or that your husband has no rights to it, so obviously the master and the husband, respectively, will acquire it according to everybody, even according to the Rabbanan, right? Because you're trying to lay down conditions on the recipient. And that you have no right to do. You can put conditions in the money. You can't insert conditions and control the powers of the recipient or how the recipient is wired up. Vim Pirshadol Shiasa Belo Amos, but if he designates what should be done with this money, Lo Kanadon Velo Bal Divrei HaKol, if he gave a distinct purpose to how the money is to be used, right? So the Rambam again asserts, even according to Rabbi Meir, which seemingly we don't understand this yet, even according to Rabbi Meir, you put a very specific usage. The money is only earmarked for such and such a thing, right? So then the kinyan goes through, right? That the eved acquires it, you know, for that usage only, and the master not, and the woman acquires it for that usage only, and the husband not, even according to Rabbi Meir. And that's, of course, if he gave, designated it, you know, a very specific purpose. Say, this money, buy with it only this, or do with it only such. But now, let's say he gives a woman money on condition that her husband has nothing to do with it, but use it, you use it the way you want. Or to the Eved, on condition that he use it to buy his freedom. Switching a page. Zeh machlokas Rav Meir v'chachomim. That's where the machlokas Rav Meir and Chachomim come up. Chachomim omrim lo kana adam v'lo baal. Right, so the Chachomim say giving sweeping rights of usage, but usage, not asset, but usage, even sweeping rights of usage, right? So neither the master nor the husband acquire it. Right? And there's no difference whether you will, you know, designate and then specify what to do with this money, or whether you tell the slave, use it to buy your freedom, or you tell a woman, right, use it as you see fit. Rav Meir Omer, and Rav Meir says, Ho below Pirish Ezem Maisim Tasa Belamos, since there was no designated purpose of how the money should be used. Ella Hitir Lasos Kiritzaina, he allows her to use it as she sees fit, even though he said usage, but nonetheless, he said, any usage you please, Kona Baal. For to a mayor, that's like saying, use it how you want. It's like saying, let your husband have no control over it. Right, Tim? It's the same, you know, because sweeping usage is like ownership. And we'll explain why in a second. Right. And also, listen, here's the point. Listen to this carefully. Listen to this Rambam carefully, because this he's going to now address the mystery that seemingly, Rav Meir said, even a specific purpose doesn't work, right? Because he's giving the Eved money specifically for his freedom, and still Rav Meir says it doesn't work. And Rambam's going to explain, no, why money for freedom is different than giving money for a specific purpose, like for food. Right? So he says like this. Listen to this very carefully. Since he wants to, through acquiring this, you know, he wants to make the Eved have his own domain through this money. Because what's the money earmarked for? For the Eved to become independent, become free. To say, use the money to be free is like saying, Al-Minas, that the master has no ownership, no rights to the money, because what are you using the money for? To release yourself from the bonds of your master. So it's like saying, Al-Minas, that your master has no control over you. The Konoran, therefore, that's nice. Nothing, and the master is Kodeh. And Aloha is like the Chachamim. Before we get to the Rambam sign-off, allow me a few, 2 minutes, to be masbir this Rambam. This Rambam is Hachla Befela. Right? I'm going to be masbir the Rambam in my own words, and you could then read back in the Rambam and see if I'm telling you the truth. Right? I think we're going to have to, how this tshuva is, Miyashiv Alav Rambam Zinyana Chazaka, I'm willing to address if you guys have the strength to go another half an hour. All right, but otherwise we'll leave it for next week. But let me just give you succinctly my Hesber, right, in the whole lumdus that was presented in this tshuva. And let's be mocked like this. Yad, right? A hand. A hand has two connotations to it, okay? Right? There's hand as in ownership, right? Like Rishus, you know, Vayikach Arzo Miyodo, like Rashi says in Bava Metzia. Showing that Yad connotes, you know, ownership, right? Yad is ownership, Rishus. Right? There's another thing about Yad, right? And that's the ability to control assets, right? As in to import and export, to be kaina and makne, right? And the two are not synonymous. A cotton doesn't have a yad to make kinyonim, right? Right? He can't be makne, and he can't really be kona. You know, I mean, obviously, there's the possibility of das acheres makne of a godel, right? But it's really mikoch the godel. But the yad cotton himself doesn't have a yad, right? To make kinyonim. It doesn't mean he doesn't have ownership. A cotton has ownership, right? Yerusha, right? The cotton was Yerush. It's his. You can't steal it from him. It's mamish his, right? But he didn't have to make a kinyan to get that money, right? The Torah made the kinyan form. Yerusha, you know, which happens mimela, right? Now, it doesn't just have to, Yerusha, right, it doesn't just have to be Yerusha, right? Lididip Shitali, I know this may be a machlokas achronim, right? But schar sochir, right? If a cotton does work, like today, kids shoveled my walk. I can't tell you, you're a cotton, I don't have to pay you, right? Because the Torah, you know, that's that. Because the Torah gives the chiv to give a worker money. The chiv is not from the contract, it's its own truth. There's the issue of lo solin schar sachir. There's biyamot titein schar. It's its own truth. And l'didi pshitali, I'm not saying all the achronim agree, but l'didi pshitali, if a cotton works for a gadol, the gadol is chayv to pay him midaraisa. It would be gezel gomer not to pay it. Right? And so a cotton has ownership, but he doesn't have a yad to import and export assets. Okay? So now, Rabbi Lezer said in Kiddushin, Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala, right? According to everybody, according both the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir, right? Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala. And yet they have a machlokas, right? Regarding when you designate, you know, regarding designating how the assets are to be used, right? So, but you know, even before we get to that, let's backtrack. The Rambam said, right, that he paskins like Shmuel, who paskins like the Chachamim, and that's why, right, by Eruv, let's take that halacha first, right, by Eruv, a man could give his wife the food to make Agban, that the food should belong to all those who want to join the Eruv. Now, the Rambam never explained how that works. The Rambam just said that which the Gemara said, that it would only work if she herself also has a house that's joining the Eruv. That was according to Rav, according to Rebbe Meir. I don't paska that way. Okay, fine, you don't paska that way. But explain to me how it works. Explain to me the Svara. Right? Explain to me the Svara. Right? So just because you don't paska like Rebbe Meir, but even the Chacham of Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala, there's just only a certain special way to circumvent it. That Rav Meir, you know, or, no, certain ways to circumvent that Rav Meir won't be maskim to. Right? But Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala, and a person gives a woman something almanas that her husband has no rishus of it, that conditions nothing. Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala. Everyone agrees Yad Isha Ki Yad Bala. So according to the Rabbanan, according to Shmuel, how does it work? That a man gives his wife food to be zochen, to be kona for all the Bnei Amavui, right? And the Rambam says, since I don't paskin like Rabbi Meir, it works. Why? Yad Isha Kiyad, you know, Kiyad Bala, according to everybody. So why is it not called that he passed it from his right hand to his left hand by giving it to his wife? So I want to tell you what I think the yesod is. And I think it's, you know, when you reread the tshuva, you'll see that this is what's here, particularly in the last few lines that we read. Right? The machokas, the Rabbanan and Rav Meir is as follows. Everyone agrees, yadi shakiyat bala legabe ownership. Ownership. Right? If a woman owns an asset, her husband owns the asset. And on that, there's no machlokes. And there's no way to override that. You can't say, I'm giving you a matana gemura, al menas that your husband shouldn't own it. You know, even according to the Rabbanan, right? It's nothing. There's no way to override that. Ownership, whatever a woman owns, her husband owns. Whatever an evet owns, her husband owns. Right? So, yad isha kiyad bala, and yad evet kiyad rabo legabe ownership. Right? But there's another function of yad, not just ownership. Right? And that's control over assets. Right? To be kone and makne. Right? You know, that's another function of yad. Right? And the two are not synonymous. Right? Because I could, right, be zoche in something for someone else. Magbia mitzil chavero kana chavero, right? You know, right, there's ways to use the power of yad, use the yad, not for ownership, but to import and export assets. I could import and export assets to my domain or import and export assets to someone else's domain, be mizake to others, right? Reb Meir holds that yad isha ki yad bala is also as far as control of assets, right? Her hand is like his hand, even legabe being kone and makne, right? And that's why, according to Reb Meir, let's start with Alokhan Eruvin. So Gemara said, according to Reb Meir, according to Rav, according to Reb Meir, right? There's no way to reconcile that Alokha, that a person can ask his wife to be zoche, you'll give her food, to be zocher for all the bnei eruv. There's no way to reconcile that halacha unless she needed to be zocher for herself, because she also was joining the eruv, right? But less, other than that, it doesn't work. And the Rambam says that's only according to Reb Meir, not according to me, right? Because the pshat is like this, right? Yad isha kiyad rabba, kiyad bala, and yad evet kiyad rabba, according to Reb Meir, also means all the functions of yad. You cannot have control over assets to the exclusion of your husband. Not just ownership, but to import and export, right? You're meshubah to import and export for your husband, right? Just like you, whatever you own, he owns, but also how you use your yacht to be kaina and makne, you have to work for your husband, right? You can't work for someone else, right? But the Rabbanan hold yad isha kiyad rabba only as far as bailus, right? Ownership. What you own, your husband owns. But you could use your legal rights to affect assets, the function of yad, of being kaina and makne, right? Right? That you could do independent from your husband, right? So what's happening in Eruvin, right? In Eruvin, right, he doesn't want to give her the food for her, right? She doesn't need it, right? She doesn't need it. It's for the bnei amavu. Right, he's giving it to her to be zoche for the bnei amavui. So says the Rambam, since I paskin like the Rabbana, not like Rabbi Meir, so legabi this, it's not yad isha kiyad bala, right? Because no, we're not talking about ownership. We're talking about making a kinyan, right? So she can make a kinyan for someone else who's not her husband, right? She can't own something to the exclusion of her husband's ownership, but she could use her koach hakinyan, the function of yad, of being kind and makna, to be mezaka to someone else, that she could do, right? But Reb Meir holds even that she can't do. Even the control of how she uses assets cannot be, you know, external to her husband's rishus. Right? So if that's the case, we're mevayar the din of eruv, you know, kamin chaimer, which is the way the Rambam paskins, that, you know, kestama the Mishnah of husband could give his wife, you know, the food to be mezaka to all the bnei amavui, if she does not qualify that she needs to own a chatzur there. So even though yad isha kiyad bala, according to Rabban, that only means as far as ownership. What she owns, he owns, right? But as far as using the koach of yad, as in to make kinyonim, she could be mezaka to someone else, but her husband doesn't own the way she uses her yad, right? He owns what she owns, right? Okay, so now let's go to, you know, so once we have this yesod straight, which I think is, you know, what's between the lines, right? So now we can understand better, you know, what's going on over here, right? You know, the Rambam said the Machlokas, Reb Meir and the Rabbanon, was purely, right, when you, you know, when the Rabbanon are Matir, right, and Reb Meir will Aser, right, is where he gives sweeping use of the assets. He's not giving it to her to own, because if she owns it, he owns it. Now that Reb Meir and the Rabbanon are Maskim, Yad Isha Kiyad Bala, as far as ownership, which he owns, he owns. Right, but he's not giving it to her to own. He's giving it to her to use. To use. She has shlita over the money. She has control over it. But he's giving it to her to use, not to own. The matana only goes through in the sense that it's hers to use. And every time she uses it that way, so the matana goes through, right? But it was never given to her to be an asset. Okay? Because even the Rabbana Maida, if it's given to her as an asset, what she owns, he owns. Okay, but Reb Meir holds that she can't control assets to the exclusion of her husband. So now, right, the way she uses the yad, the koach of yad to make use, right, the shlita over the assets, just like being konen makna huwa dinami hishtamshus, right. So Reb Meir holds like this, according to the Rambam. Right, if he gave it to her for a very specific purpose, right, so it's not called she's being shalit at all. She has no shlita over the assets. The Nisen retained full rights. He's only allowing it used for a particular way. That's not called control. The broader meaning of yad, of control over assets, yad is in control, right? Right? So Meir holds, she can't control something to the exclusion of her husband. But if it's given only for a specific purpose, she's not in control at all. The Nisen remains in full control. He's only authorizing her for a particular thing. Right, so it's not called that she's shalit. So it's not a violation of yad isha ki yad bala, because she doesn't really have a yad here, a yad in the sense of having control over the assets. Right? She doesn't have control over them, because they're only designated for a very particular purpose. The one who's in control is the giver. Right, but the Rabbanan hold, no, anytime, even broad ishtar, as long as it's not an asset, right? So on this, you know, control, shlita, on that we don't say yad isha ki yad rabba. Control over assets, her hand is not like his hand, right? But that's be only out shlita, right? Not out asset, because ownership, what she owns, he owns, right? So the Rabbanan say, even if he gave her broad authorization to use it for whatever she pleases, right? Even broad authorization, still it's all called that she's being shalit. Right, she's in control of it. She has hishtamshus, but she doesn't have bailus. But Reb Meir holds sweeping usage is called rishus. Yad is in rishus. Rishus ha'isha k'rishus bala. You get it? According to Reb Meir, the machlokas Rabbanan and Reb Meir is where yad isha kiyad bala, is it going on ownership or is it going on rishus, domain, control? Right? So yad isha ki yad bala is her control, is his control. But if she only got it for a specific purpose, it's not called yada. It's not called that it's in her rishus, because she doesn't have control over it. You know, the nisen is retaining control. Right? So it's not called yada isha at all. Right? But if you gave it to her for sweeping, you know, sweeping rights to use it as she darn pleases, she's in control. That's called biyada, as in birshusa. But you know, she uses it, she sees fit. Yad isha kiyad rabba. Like, yad eva kiyad rabba, and yad isha kiyad bala. Except when it's given for a specific purpose. Right? Because then really the nice is in control. So far, so good. I think it's mamish pshat in the Rambam. So now we get to the Rambam's final nakuda. Right? So he said, it remains matir by specific purposes. Right? Remains matir by specific purposes. So what's wrong with the case that he gave it to the Eved for the specific purpose of acquiring his freedom? Why does Reb Meir apostle? So the Rambam explained. We'll read it again. It's so beautiful, like the way we're explaining it. Right? V'chein be'eved, ho'vo'otu lo'tzio, l'rashus atzmo. The Eved wants to be in his own rishus. The tachlis of that specific purpose is to be in his own domain. Right? It's so beautiful because the tachlis of that specific purpose is to usurp the rishus of the other. So it's called a rishus atzmo. Right? So what if it was a specific purpose? That specific purpose is kailo akol. That specific purpose is for the eved to have rishus independent of his other. And that's a violation of yad eved ki yad rabo. Because yad by Rabbi Meir, hen by the isha, hen by the eved means rishus. And so almanas, that you should use it to buy your freedom, is to usurp the Adon's rishus. Right? So that it's not a specific purpose. It's mamshi usurping of the Adon's rishus. It's to liberate you from the Adon. So that's usurp as rishus. As opposed to the Rambam's lehedja matir, both in the tshuva and the Yadach Hazakah, you could give an Evet something almanas that he only eat, only buy food, or only buy clothes, and that does work. Because that specific purpose doesn't usurp the Rishus HaAdon, right? It's not called that the Eved's in control and the other not, because the one who's really in control is the giver. But over here he's saying use it for a specific purpose of buying your freedom, that usurps the Rishus of the other. And therefore it's a violation of Yad Eved, as in Rishus Eved, Rishus HaAdon. You hear it? That's Kamin Chaymer. And it's Hafa de Columbus. The only one who came close was the Ran. And none of the Rishonim had this tshuva, right? I personally am exhausted, right? But if you allow me next week, if you guys want to come back, I want to go through a few places in the Yad HaZaka and see how this tshuva illuminates a lot of things, and also a few other ha'aris that I have on the sugya b'derech klal of this whole inyan. We're just l'man shleimus hadavar. Tzvi says we got to read every word, like in Brisk. So let's just finish the final words of the tshuva. The kvar achdech pamad vayim bosim pamakne losim b'chol kocheinu osam asfekas kulam shabozo. Now I've spoke at great length, right? And I repeated myself, right? We did it with all. So I guess what to learn from here is how to be a good teacher, right? Right? We all went through this double, and we went through it all to using all our strength to dispel all the doubts that Rabbeinu Ephraim had. And explained that there's no contradiction between the Gemara Nedarim and the Gemara Kiddushin, just the opposite. The Gemara Nedarim is predicated on the Gemara Kiddushin, the way we explained. Okay, gentlemen, I'm exhausted. So if you're with your permission, next week I will just quickly recap, and I just want to make a few oras in the Mishneh Torah, based on what we learned this week, and then we'll move on to the next tshuva. Okay, give me feedback, and if you didn't like it, give me one more chance. Okay, thank you very much. Have a good night, everybody.
ahead and pull it up when you get it, Bruce.
Okay, one second.